Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri podcast by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. That is the sound of the river, which normally is about the size of a brook, rushing by, and the sound of rain and ice coming off the roof. I have no power. I have a kerosene lamp on that I'm going to be turning off soon now that it's slowly getting light. It's one of those days that if I were a kid, I would just be screaming with joy, snow day, no school, whatever. As an adult, now I'm looking at changing my schedule. One of the problems with changing my schedule is that I'm standing here looking out the door, and it's incredible. Everything is covered with ice. I have a giant blue spruce right next to my house that is taller than the house, and it and some pines not that far away, they all look like folded umbrellas. Their branches are covered with ice, and the weight of the ice has just pushed them down to the ground. Last night, I was awakened by the sound of ice sliding off my metal roof. And it was amazing. I mean, it just sounded like an avalanche. It was so noisy, and it made the dogs bark. And then I heard either a very large branch or a tree snap off. And because I'm surrounded by woods here, as soon as that happened, I held my breath. And when it didn't hit the house, I gave thanks. My ornamental grass in front of the house has been smashed down, so it looks like two little pathetic haystacks. So what I'm doing now, in case you wondered, besides looking out my window and thinking about the weather and wondering when the power is going to come on and when I'm going to get the laundry done and whether I'll be able to see clients tomorrow and make my 9 o'clock car appointment this morning, what I'm doing is I'm doing this podcast. Something that I normally wouldn't get around to for another couple days. And the unpredictability of the weather and the unpredictability of animals. But the unpredictability of the weather serves as a nice backdrop for a study that I recently learned about. This was a study done by cognitive scientists Frederica Range and her colleagues at the University of Vienna. And what they discovered was that dogs have what we might call a sense of fairness. And what they did was preferentially reward one dog for showing behavior over another. I thought this study was very cool. Not because of what it proved, because it proves something that everybody who has dogs knows. What was good about it is that at least in Europe, studies of this kind in animal cognition are moving forward nicely. And hopefully as these continue, there will be more interest in doing this in the United States. If it's going to happen in this country, I suspect it's going to have to come from outside the sciences we normally consider associated with companion animal behavior. And that is primarily the human behavioral sciences. The reason for this is that back in the 50s through the 70s, the human behavioral sciences became deeply invested in what they referred to as behavioralism. Behavioralism maintained that animals who were rewarded for doing something would repeat it, and those who were punished for doing something would not repeat it. Or if they didn't get any reward at all, they wouldn't repeat it. The other key ingredient in this doctrine or dogma was that animals responded to what these people referred to as drives. And the drives were pretty simple. They were things like hunger, so to get something to eat, to avoid pain, or to reproduce. Another term for this approach was the mechanistic view. Behavioralism and this type of training was based on the idea of the animal as a machine, a non-thinking, a non-feeling machine. Although they did allow the animal to feel pain, because in order for punishment to work, the animal had to feel pain. Unfortunately, this school of thought lies at the foundation of the bulk of training. Training in the academic sense. Although many, many trainers use the behavioral approach, and they will talk about instrumental learning, and they will talk about reward and punishment, few of them view animals as machines. They might use techniques that were designed based on the mechanistic view, but they don't personally believe this. They are very comfortable with the L word. They know they love their animals. They know their animals display emotions toward them that they believe are consistent with the animal returning that love. And they know that the bulk of the animals that they work with belong to people who feel exactly the same way. So there's a real disconnect here between the technique that's being used and the philosophy of the people who are using it. And this is a good thing. I personally find the mechanistic view proposed by behavioralism is very, very troubling, extremely troubling, because it doesn't coincide with reality. It's made up. It's a made up set of circumstances that are necessary in order for it to work. And there's the rub. Reward and punishment superficially do appear to work. However, if you start looking at this in terms of stress to the animal, that's not necessarily the case. Steve Lindsay, who has... Steve, excuse me, I got to get out of here. Steve, oops, they're going where I'm going. Steve Lindsay, who has written a 3-volume series on canine learning theory that is just, so exhausting. And excuse me, well, that too, but so exhaustive in its documentation of research and anything you might think about, any study that has ever been done about learning and teaching theories, you'll find in one of his books. And he makes the statement that anytime we ask an animal to do something that is out of context, we're punishing that dog. Doesn't matter if we give a reward afterwards, that's punishment. We are punishing that animal. The thing about the behavioral school is that it doesn't acknowledge that. That problem does not exist because the animals aren't capable of thinking that way. You know, they're just being shoved one way or another by their drives over which they have no control, and the rewards or punishments. This little, little machine. So I like seeing these studies about cognition come in because they make us think. It's even to the point that when those usually from the human behavioral sciences object to these conclusions, saying, no, that's not really true, that doesn't prove anything, this is just a statistical error, anthropomorphism, or whatever, I accept this, I understand where they're coming from. Because if you look at some of the experiments that have been done on animals by the mechanistic school, I think it would be very, very difficult for them to own up that what they were thinking wasn't true. If they were to look back at those very, very troubling animal experiments in terms of the knowledge that those animals were indeed very capable of thought, very capable of emotion, they'd have a hard time. But for the rest of us, we should rejoice. We should rejoice in these studies that seem to conclude the obvious that we always knew. Because even though it's obvious to you and me, it hasn't been that obvious to some of those who have been responsible for some ideas and techniques that have had some very far-reaching effects on our animals and their physical and mental health. So let's hear it for those dogs with judgment, and let's learn from them. Do unto others. That's the spirit.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.